This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Last week, a broad alliance of civil society organisations filed a pioneering complaint at the Malaysian Human Rights Commission, or SUHAKAM, as a proactive countermeasure to address the chronic and persistent haze pollution. So this was the first ever complaint filed in Malaysia that combined both environmental issues with human rights, and the coalition is advocating for a public inquiry into the gaps in the governance of domestic and transboundary haze pollution, amongst many other things as well. So I'm going to find out more from Dr. Helena Vaki. She's the Vice President of Cerah Anti-Haze Action. She's also a Senior Lecturer at the Department of International and Strategic Studies at the University of Malaya. And also Kiu Jiayao, who is the Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. He's also the Secretariat Member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group Malaysia on SDGs. And he's also the Secretary of Cerah Anti-Haze Action. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Thank you very well.
Lovely to have you both back on the show. And the first time I'm having the both of you together. So yes, you are both part of the group I mentioned earlier, the civil society group Cerah. Maybe just for the context, you know, of this interview, can you remind us, you know, what it is that Cerah advocates for?
Cerah came about in response to the 2015 haze episode that we had. And it has grown since. It's made up of a very diverse group of individuals who have come together to protect our right to clean air, and also to find solutions to fight the haze pollution. So in the lead up to our filing of the SUHAKAM complaint, we are very pleased to be joined and supported by many NGOs. And these are Greenpeace Malaysia, Global Environment Centre, PEKA, KAMI, Sabah Alam Malaysia, EPSM, JEDI, SUARAM, Stop Open Burning in Johan Setia, GRASS Malaysia, and UNDI 18.
Okay, yeah. That's a nice coalition of groups. I think all of you, you know, working separately, you know, on these issues, but now coming together. So that's really cool. And of course, the topic that we're going to talk about today is haze mostly, right? And I think, you know, if I remember correctly, we had a couple of haze-free years. I remember September 2019 being pretty much the most recent bout of suffering, if I can remember correctly. But let's just look back, right? And correct me if I'm wrong. There were major episodes of fire and transboundary haze pollution occurring from as early as the 1980s and 1990s. Am I correct? Maybe you can just help explain how serious the transboundary haze pollution problem is, especially in the ASEAN region.
Yeah, sure. So the first time we actually had reports of transboundary haze was in 1983. And then we had the really huge event in 1990, which I think most of us remember. And you are correct. Our most recent was in 2019. Previously, before that, was 2015 was the bad year. And we've had comparatively haze-free years for 2020 and 2021 due to a combination of both favorable meteorological conditions and also the economic slowdown due to COVID. So there's been less land opening on the ground. But that's not to say there hasn't been any local fires on the ground. We still have isolated reports of fires occurring in certain places like in Sumatra and Kalimantan and even in Thailand and even in Malaysia. What is interesting as well is that there's been an increasingly more serious problem as well in the northern part of ASEAN, so at the Golden Triangle area, Thailand, and that area. So we've actually had this sort of increase rather than decrease of severity of haze in the region, where we have two quite unique regions with quite unique drivers but suffering from the same problem of transboundary haze pollution.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the problem with us is when we don't have the haze, you know, that annual descent of the haze, we completely forget about it, right? And I think I feel like this complaint that, you know, has been lodged, which we're going to talk about in more detail later, is a good way to, you know, remind people about this. But also, can you just remind all of us, you know, how haze happens in the first place? You know, who are the usual suspects, the culprits that cause this sort of transboundary haze to happen?
Sure. So I'll focus a bit more on the problem in the southern part of Southeast Asia. As I mentioned, northern is a bit of a different issue there. So for us in Malaysia and Indonesia, usually haze occurs when fires happen, usually in peatlands. And it becomes transboundary when there's enough smoke that travels. There's so much smoke that it travels actually across boundaries. When it's not that big of a fire, it's just localized. So peatlands, they're very common in Indonesia, in Malaysia, especially on our coastal areas. Sarawak has huge deposits, and peatlands are usually waterlogged. If you just Google it, you will find that they are very unique and very sensitive ecosystems. They are usually flooded and they are usually protected in most areas because of their very unique importance to carbon balance as well as for biodiversity. However, the demand for agricultural land in the region has led up to the opening up of these lands. And when you want to open up peatlands, you have no choice, but you have to drain it so it becomes dry enough and stable enough to plant on. But when this happens, they dry out very quickly and they become very fire prone. They're very carbon rich. So basically it's a tinderbox. In the past, there was a lot of intentional burning as a cheap and quick way to clear the land. And even though this is a bit of a less of a problem now because everybody is more conscious of this, accidental fires can still very easily occur on this peatland. So the fact that there's a lot of agriculture still being established, still continuing to drain peatlands is really increasing the risk of fires on peatlands. And this is where we usually see the problem. So it's a combination of all of these issues. Large companies have been there for decades and they are still operating on peatlands. So they have this very difficult challenge of sort of managing at the same time to make sure there's no fires breaking out. And we also have medium-sized companies coming in and opening up who are less in the spotlight. So they're a bit under the radar. And we also have smallholders as well. So it's all this combination of factors.
Mm-hmm. And if you could just sort of remind us also, you know, the fallouts, right, the major negative impacts from all these different incidences of transboundary haze.
Sure. So we could probably divide it into three big areas: health, economic, and politics. So, of course, for health, this is our immediate concern, right? We are breathing in unhealthy air. So there's been quite a lot of interesting new research coming out around the 2015 haze. And they have actually estimated that it was about 40,000 to 100,000 additional deaths in the region because of the 2015 haze. So this is, of course, very big. And it's not only deaths, of course, there's a lot of long-term effects as well. So especially the very old and the very young are very at risk. In terms of economy, of course, we have lost man hours when we cannot go to work and people who are working outside are unable to go outside to work. We have the increasing healthcare costs that you need even just to buy masks or to visit the doctor for a sore throat or anything like that. This definitely increases a lot during haze. And for Malaysia, a country which is very reliant on tourism, tourist numbers always drop during the haze season. Of course, now with COVID, it's not that much of an issue, tourism, because it's already a moot point. But definitely in the past, tourism was majorly impacted from haze. In terms of politics and government, basically, you know, national budgets do not really plan for this kind of emergency. So when you have to spend more on what, on cloud seeding, on firefighting, all this really adds up. And of course, it also contributes to diplomatic tensions in the region when we have Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore sort of, you know, trying to figure it out and navigate this really sensitive issue in terms of political engagement.
Mm-hmm. Which often ends up being a finger-pointing and blame game sort of situation, right?
Definitely.
Do we have any real sort of legislative solutions to stop transboundary haze? So I know that Malaysia, we tabled our own Transboundary Haze Pollution Act in September 2019, right? But then last year in August, the government of the day, I lose track who it was, announced its decision to shelve the act, right? Can you just remind us about what this all was all about?
In the regional level, we have the ASEAN Agreement on Transboundary Haze Pollution, and that was actually signed in 2002, when Malaysia was the first country actually to ratify it. And in 2015, I think, Indonesia has ratified it as the last country to ratify. So all the ASEAN countries have signed on to it. But that is only, that remains a regional agreement among the ASEAN countries. And what it means is domestically, citizens cannot use that piece of agreement, that treaty, if you want to call it that. And on the other hand, governments are not quite empowered under that agreement to hold each other to account. Although it's legally binding, but there's no mechanism for failure of one member state to act, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it lacks teeth. It needs to be developed upon. It is useful for cooperation. It's considered the first for ASEAN. But domestically, we have a gap, a major gap in the legal system. Like all countries, we have formed our legal system, the Malaysian legal system, based on assumption that the legal system exists in a vacuum. So when the transboundary pollution comes in across the border, the legal system has got no mechanism to deal with it. Yeah, even when the pollution is contributed to by actors or companies in this case, that is inside the Malaysian jurisdiction. And then that their activities outside contribute to pollution, that pollution flies back into Malaysia and harms, let's say, Malaysian victims. Malaysian victims have no mechanisms, no access to remedy to even hold these Malaysian interested parties to account. So that's the this problem has really illustrated the gap of sovereign systems. So in 2019, we had a bad haze year, right? And so the then government announced that it was going to draw up a domestic transboundary haze pollution act. And it was going to MESTEC at that time, the Environmental Ministry announced that the intention is particularly to empower the government, the Malaysian government, to hold Malaysian companies, parent companies that have subsidiaries that contribute to haze, to account using Malaysia, using this new law. And the law will be guided by principles like the precautionary principle and the polluter pays principle. These are fundamental principles in environmental law. Now, so that effort on drafting that new law started in around that time. But then the change of government happened, seizure of power in 2020. And so like you mentioned, like by August of 2020, the environmental minister then announced that cabinet has decided that they would scrap the effort of developing the new law and instead rely on good old diplomacy to deal with the transboundary haze issue. So yeah, that's where we are right now. So we're back to that.
And what did you think of that move, you know, that move by the Environment Minister last August to shelve that whole act, you know, and as you said, La Jaya, you know, to rely on good old diplomacy to solve this problem?
Actually, so on the Malaysian bar, we came up with a press release in response at that time. Because we were confused, we were saying, why can't the two go up, happen at the same time? Because they do not conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah. One is about accountability, and we are talking about holding our own Malaysian businesses who are investing overseas for agricultural development to account, and so that they are better business actors in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that they cause no harm in the course of creating wealth and creating livelihoods and contributing to our economies. Whereas the other one is diplomacy. Both are very different species and different toolkits in that sense. Of course, diplomacy, we have been using that in the past decades to very, very little success.
Yeah.
And so what is the evidence that continuing to pursue that is going to yield any significant? And whereas disabling ourselves to plug the gaps in our legal system, I think is irrational. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads us to this Suhakam complaint, because we needed to highlight that there are major gaps here, and we need to plug these gaps.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But Helena, how did you feel, you know, about what happened last August? You know, when that whole thing was scrapped. I know that was something that you were also advocating for.
Yeah, so actually, this was actually happening in this whole backdrop of ASEAN, because in the few years ago, 2014, Singapore actually put into force their own Singapore Transboundary Haze Law. And this was sort of placed within the agreement that Jaya talked about. In the agreement, the ASEAN agreement has an allowance, or rather does encourage countries to create their own legal recourse or new laws to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And Singapore said that, you know, we are in accordance with this agreement. We are creating laws to handle this problem. And Singapore being in quite a unique position, because of course they are very small, they don't have operations within their country, so they had a transnational law which was trying to hold anyone in the whole world who would cause haze in Singapore technically would be accountable under Singaporean law. But this didn't go down so well at the ASEAN level. Indonesia was not very happy because they felt that Singapore was overstepping its boundaries and not really being a good ASEAN neighbor, because we already the argument that Indonesia Indonesia presented was there was already this mechanism under ASEAN, which is the ASEAN agreement. But as we know, it was not really working very well after all these decades. So what Malaysia did was very exciting at the time, because we thought that it's picking up where Singapore left off and trying to improve the shortcomings in terms of the diplomatic shortcomings. So Malaysia was not going to go along the same lines where anyone would be accountable. We just wanted to take care of our own plantation interests in Indonesia. So like, for example, I felt that that was a very brilliant thing to do. We wouldn't be stepping on anybody's toes, but at the same time, we'd be using the instruments prepared by ASEAN in order for us to promote this cause, to try and hold people accountable. So I felt this was a very acceptable move diplomatically for Malaysia. So that's why I mean, personally, it was quite disappointing to find that even despite this sort of middle ground approach, when the government changed, it was still felt as perhaps too dangerous or too sensitive to proceed. So this is where we are back at, diplomatic engagement, like Jayao said. And diplomatic engagement, unfortunately, has not worked for 4 decades. So if you keep doing the same thing again and again, it means you are crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and expecting some different result, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right. We're going to go for a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to find out more about this very pioneering complaint that has been lodged with the Suhakam, with the Malaysian Human Rights Commission. I'm speaking today to Dr. Helena Vaki. She's the Vice President of Cerah Anti-Haze Action, and also Q Jiayao, who is the Secretary of the Cerah Anti-Haze Action. We're going to come back after this quick break and find out more about what they're advocating for through this complaint. Keep it right here on Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Dr. Helena Vaki and Q Jiayao. Helena is the Vice President of the Cerah Anti-Haze Action. She's also a Senior Lecturer at the Department of International and Strategic Studies at the University of Malaya. Jiayao is the Co-Deputy Chair at the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. He's also a Secretariat Member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group Malaysia on SDGs. And we're talking about, you know, this pioneering complaint that has been, was lodged, right, with the Malaysian Human Rights Commission, and this is by the Anti-Haze Action Coalition, Cerah Anti-Haze Action Coalition, which is a group of Malaysian civil society organisations all coming together to call for systemic solutions for overcoming haze pollution and basically protecting our right to clean air. So yes, let's talk about this. You know, you guys have, the coalition has filed this official complaint with Suhakam. What is it exactly that you're seeking, why did you take this path, I suppose?
Why did we take this path? I think very broadly, this is fundamental issues at hand, as Helena has pointed out, involving health of all segments of society, involving livelihoods, etc. So it is a human rights abuse, the direct effects of the pollution, and the fact that there are no meaningful access to remedies for persons who have been harmed by persons who contribute to these activities. That it also is a human right problem, yeah, because we live in a jurisdiction, we live in a society that espouses the rule of law, but here there is no rule of law for cosmopolitan businesses that operate beyond borders. And we see a gap. So coupled with that, I also want to point out the other reason of why it's so important for our national human rights institution, Suhakam, to play a role in this, is because the who is taking leadership and who is, in other words, not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We felt that the pressure really was left to civil society to lead this, because the government has taken a regressive position, yeah, going back to the old methods of the 80s and the 90s to say, let's work behind closed doors and use our diplomatic channels to the exclusion of stakeholders. Yeah, so we are not involved. We don't know how decisions are made and what kind of considerations are made. For instance, when there's a lot of input that could be had from all of society, and the challenge of transboundary pollution is a complex matter. Yeah? It is not a simple pollution matter that can be tackled from the top down alone. Because the factors that contribute to haze pollution is varied, it is complex, and it is very tied together as well with major interests, because the businesses that drive these large agricultural industries, they also have tend to have very close interests and relationships with the elites in government. Yeah, so this is a fact as well, and this tends to lend to a reluctance, a reluctance to take hard action, make real deep systemic change, and instead rather prefer, tend to prefer softer, slower, gentler reforms or changes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that means that human rights abuse would continue, and so that's why we think that Suhakam has a very important role to play, because human rights are human rights and they affect all humans. And so it's an independent institution. We're very lucky to have Suhakam, which has been a very robust and strong institution that's been, you know, very courageous in its work. So we've got a lot of confidence, and that's why we've brought it there as a place to have an inquiry into this problem and then work towards solutions.
Mm-hmm. And a right to a clean environment is stated in our federal constitution, isn't it?
Yeah, so indeed, the right to a clean environment is the basis to our right to life, because our federal constitution articulates a lot of fundamental liberties. That means these are liberties that come not from the state, not that the state didn't give that to us. They are inherent in us because we are human beings. And therefore, and that's a very powerful concept in the sense that anyone who is a human being has these rights and have these fundamental liberties. And so we have under our federal constitution, it expressly protects. So right to life has been interpreted to mean right to livelihood and things like that. So underlying that surely must be your, if you have a right to livelihood, you must certainly have a right to clean air, clean water, and a clean environment. Now, although the environment is not expressly stated, but by the force of logic, surely it must be there. Mm-hmm. But we are also supported by the fact that the Human Rights Council has recently made a very clear acknowledgement that environmental rights, right to a clean environment, are human rights. And so they are incorporated into the body of human rights and which Malaysia subscribes to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm sure this is all the things that you were also thinking about when you put forward this official complaint, right? Can you help spell out what exactly it is you're seeking, you know, and I believe you've given some recommendations as well. Could you also outline those?
Mm. So we have framed it as the problem of haze pollution, as well as the lack of mechanisms to protect the right to clean air. And so we've identified some gaps in the domestic and the regional legal framework. And so we've pointed towards several themes for recommendations for Suhakam to make. So firstly, we invite and we urge Suhakam to convene a sort of public inquiry, a public discussion into the problem, and then to look into that. And the recommendations and findings that we hope it will make at the end of that inquiry would be firstly to strengthen our environmental rights in Malaysia, right? And to put an end to any doubt that the right to life includes a right to clean, safe, healthy, and sustainable environment. And of course, that includes clean air. The other fundamental piece that we hope that Suhakam would acknowledge and reiterate is that, particularly for an emergent economy and growing country like Malaysia, which is that the governance of the environment is best done with all of society. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So rather than a top-down approach, that public participation is really a key element. And for public participation for this, the key pillars for that is there must be access to information. Yeah. So members of the public, persons who are affected and interested should have access to information, whether it's information from the state or from non-state actors. That should be access to public participation. That means they should be able to participate in governance, in public interest-related decision-making. And then thirdly, there must be access to justice, access to remedies. That means they must have meaningful ways to raise their worries, to raise their, make their claims when they are harmed, and also ask for an independent institution like a judiciary, like a court, to actually stop persons who are actually causing harm. Yeah. So these are fundamental pieces that we are urging Suhakam to make. Next, we are also urging Suhakam to recommend to the government to put in place legal frameworks that's going to plug the gaps, yeah, when it comes to transboundary pollution. So whether that could be in the form of having a domestic haze pollution act that's going to empower government as well as civil society and members of the public, and related things like that, and granting access to justice. Now, there's a third element which is really fundamental as well, and that's related to Suhakam's ongoing work, and that's on the recognition and the strengthening of the business and human rights aspect. Uh-huh. Yeah, because businesses have such a profound importance in our lives and in our societies that because of that, the businesses must have a duty to respect human rights. So the state has to protect human rights. Businesses, while they don't need to protect our human rights, but they must respect our human rights. And then the other arm on the business and human rights principles would be that there must be access to remedies when human rights abuses occur. Mm-hmm. So these things all fall squarely within the haze pollution situation. So we're hoping for recommendations along these lines. So these are recommendations to the government. Of course, they are not like judgments. It's not a court. So Suhakam will not be making a finding to say these companies have been polluting and they should be held accountable. We're not going in that direction, but we're making forward-looking recommendations to the government.
Mm-hmm. So that is pretty much the role that Suhakam will play, right? Recommending what should be done to the government. Because I think as some people be like, what can Suhakam actually do, right? So, I mean, these are the things as you outline, correct?
Yes, that's right. To make recommendations to the state and to make findings as well. And so while in itself it will not result in an end to the haze problem, but it produces the component pieces that are really important for all the other stakeholders that are working on these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a fundamental strategic step.
Yeah, it's a part of quite a big jigsaw puzzle, I suppose, right? But it's a very, very important part as well.
Exactly.
And how has Suhakam responded so far to this complaint? I mean, how have they come up to say anything about it? You know, any sort of feedback?
I think when we presented our complaint to Suhakam, we were very well received. Dato Mao Wing Kwai, who's one of the human rights commissioners, welcomed us very well. And he expressed a lot of positive views towards what the complaint about. And he was very indeed looking forward to working together with us and the coalition and all stakeholders towards articulating the problem and finding real solutions towards this in the coming months. So we're very encouraged by this.
Okay, excellent. I just want to go back to something that we were talking about earlier that Jaya, you mentioned, right? There is something, of course, called the ASEAN Agreement on Transboundary Haze Pollution. You know, you told us what it's all about. I don't know, what do you think? Has it been effective in any way in preventing transboundary haze? What are some of the shortcomings, I suppose, of this agreement?
So it's been very effective in sort of coordinating and getting everybody on the same page. We have regular meetings and that's where people present what's happening on the ground. So it's been quite good for sort of this facilitation of sharing information and all. But however, it's still very specific types of information. Not everything is openly available. Some of the shortcomings, as Jaya has mentioned, there's no enforcement mechanism. There's no conflict resolution measures. So if a particular country is not doing what it's supposed to do, there's no recourse actually for either ASEAN or other countries to take. Some of the good things that has happened is that there's been an establishment of national monitoring centers for all countries. So we actually have a specific center to monitor fire events and the responses. There's also a region-wide SOP to respond to haze. However, there are things that are not working very well for this SOP. So for example, one key stumbling point is also always the joint emergency response. Mm. So technically, under the agreement, when the fire is there, you would trigger a joint emergency response where almost automatically countries can actually offer assistance and firefighters or whatever that is needed. However, this, again, because there's no enforcement mechanism, it's been quite slow. So, for example, Indonesia has often denied assistance, and this has resulted in the fires going out of control, and then we have a bigger haze event. So this is something that's still quite weak and can be further worked upon. One of the other things in the agreement is actually there's supposed to be an establishment of the ASEAN Coordination Center for Haze, which means that there is a standalone center monitoring haze for the whole region. Mm-hmm. However, until today, this center has not yet been established. Currently, all of the coordination is happening out of ASEAN Secretariat, which is handling basically everything. So this center would be really helpful, I believe, in really focusing the energies and really making sure everything is running as it's supposed to be for the agreement. So that is the current status. But on a broader sense, I mentioned the importance of data. Yeah. This is still something that is very much lacking at the regional level. So, for example, we don't have a standardized air pollution index in the region. So you have a particular index in Singapore, but in Johor, it would be different, for example. So this makes it difficult for countries to make good decisions when it comes to haze. Another issue is also in terms of sharing data and capacity building. I've mentioned the problem in the north is getting worse, but the CLMV countries, some of them don't even have monitoring stations. They don't have enough monitoring stations. Whereas, for example, like Malaysia and Singapore, we are quite good at that. So these are the kind of challenges that this agreement is supposed to address. And I think they have not been able to yet because of various things, budget being one of them. So we really need to standardize our capacity in the region and standardize the willingness to share and get uniform data so that we can make informed decisions for haze in the region.
Mm-hmm. And Jayo, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I think I think Helena's pointed out the really important scientific cooperation and the technical cooperation in preventing fires. Maybe on an aspect of thinking about the problem is also about preventing and changing behaviors of how the entire supply chain of actors in the agricultural business industry to contribute towards mitigating these risks in the first place. And so one important element towards changing this behavior is for there to be access to remedies towards accountability so that there will be a cost element that will be attached to less responsible behavior or choices. So because there's a degree of data that is lacking, as Helena pointed out, how they, at various parts of this supply chain, how they make their decisions, how they choose between what options they have, how they juggle their cost-benefit analysis. It will be very helpful if that is informed by the reality that there is a legal framework for accountability, where the cost of pollution would come back to roost, would come back to the ones who can be shown to be contributing as accurately as possible. I think that would be really helpful. So in that sense, I think gaps in data is a big problem in terms of identifying with a high degree of clarity on culpability and contribution towards haze. Because the haze is only that comes from fires, but there are many things that lead to the heightened risk of fires. And then there are many factors that are involved in how and why fires occur. And all these are enmeshed together. So if you look at the whole spectrum from persons contributing right down to persons breathing in the haze and the smoke, toxic smoke, it's a long distance. So it's much easier for the persons who are doing the activities at the activity end to be motivated, to be motivated to actually opt for the more responsible options. And take on those responsibilities, essentially, because it is highly inefficient for society to correct these poor decisions at the other end of the spectrum, where we expect those who have suffered harm to find their way through the legal justice system to articulate what is the problem how they've been harmed and what should be the fix, you know, particularly for this kind of harm where it is so dispersed among wide sections of society. It's very hard for one plaintiff, one claimant to use his or her asthma attack to link to the whole story of haze. And so, you know, it is highly inefficient. Of course, it is extremely unjust to expect that to happen. So it's a more rational, much more rational way, actually, for us to build and ensure a legal framework to exist. So the haze problem exists not whether or not there are haze particles in the air. The haze problem is about whether or not there are legal frameworks in the region, you know, that's protecting us.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So that should be the test.
Okay. All right. And that is what you're hoping will come out from, you know, from this complaint that has been put forth and right? I mean, yeah. Okay. And
exactly.
Yeah. I guess, you know, what if, you know, if you could tell people what to do or if you could sort of dictate what should be done, what are the best methods of monitoring, preventing and mitigating transboundary haze?
Basically, the issue here, of course, like Jaya has pointed out, it's prevention is most important. Once once fires catch on in peatlands, it's really hard to put out. So I think all of the energies should be on preventing. And like Jaya said as well, the prevention, it's a combination of the government has to do their job, the companies have to do their job, and even the communities have to do their job as well. And I think one of the most important things linking to that is this whole supply chain idea where we as consumers must be very aware that we have the power to actually encourage and to tell the companies that we don't enjoy haze and we would appreciate if they would be a bit more careful about this. And I think this is something that we are quite weak in Malaysia. There's not much understanding of the connection between certain commodities and haze. That's not much of a voice being spoken out in Malaysia about the power of consumers to actually change decision makers in the companies and in the government as well. So I think if we can actually just speak a bit louder, speak a bit more confidently about what we want from the companies. There's a lot of things that can be done on the ground. For example, water sharing agreements within plantations. One of the big issues with peatlands is that sometimes now, since there's so much concern about plantations making sure there's no fires on their area, they tend to hold all the water back in their plantations, meaning that they build dams to make sure that their plantations are always damp. So there will be less possibility of fires. But what happens then is that the water does not flow to the surrounding communities. And these surrounding communities, they may also be on peatlands and their area gets dried out. And when fire occurs there, there's no water for them to use to put these fires out. So I think these kind of things, we should encourage companies to be more careful and more strategic in managing their interests. So to make sure not just to take care of your company, your area, but also to make sure the communities near you are also taken care of and are also given fair access to water and to other things that they need. So that as a whole, your commodity that you are producing does not have a negative impact on the landscape and does not produce haze for Malaysia and for the rest of the region. So I think that kind of long-term or long view of the problem is very important.
Mm-hmm. It should be a given, right? But it's not, unfortunately, right? I mean, you would think, I guess, you know, just to kind of conclude, you know, how would you like people to get involved with this particular campaign, shall we call it? You know, how I think you pointed out as well, Helena, people aren't getting angry enough or people aren't realizing the power that they have as well, you know, to voice their opinion. What are your thoughts on that? How people can get involved as well?
I think people can get involved by supporting the complaint, by paying attention and being a bit more curious into the story and the narrative behind haze. So, for example, it is what it's not, right? So it's certainly not a problem of like a football game. It's not between one country against another. And so it go deeper. And it's, you know, it's not very complicated because it is a story that is related to us about the commodities that we rely on. It's a story that revolves around the business champions in our markets. They have an important role to play, and we want them to play their role as companies that contribute to growth in a positive way and to be truly sustainable players instead of those that are just paying lip service towards these important issues. Yeah. So we want various things. So how people can get involved is to really sign on to a petition that we have to say that, yes, it is important for us to have this discussion and this inquiry and to have these recommendations, because it's important for the government to take action. And people need to do this, because otherwise, then it will not be perceived as something that is relevant or urgent or important. Yeah? Because they, like I mentioned, the government may tend to prefer a kind of diplomacy and the familiar routes, yeah, and also to with the concern that there might be a trade-off, a really wrong conception that there's a trade-off, that by having more accountability and more sustainability efforts, then growth will take a hit, GDP mm-hmm. will take a hit. But really, I think people need to participate and say that, hey, GDP alone is a very limited and narrow measure of well-being, and we want more, and those things that relate to the recommendations that we talk about are important, so that we have a higher resolution of what progress looks like, yeah, and more inclusive as well.
Okay, all right. Helena, anything you wanted to add to that?
I think the final thing is that just this is what CERA is all about. We want to make it clear that the haze, even though it's seasonal, we cannot treat it as a seasonal problem. We are putting this complaint forward during a time where we have not had haze for 2 years, but that is not the point. I think that actually makes the point that, you know, if we don't change, it will happen again. The problem with haze is when haze goes away, even our government, when they're talking about it, you can feel their relief when the haze finally goes away, because they can stop worrying about it anymore. But the reality is the effects are not just at the time, it is very long term. So we should not only concentrate on haze when it's happening, but we do want to have a constant push, a constant pressure, so that we can really say, like what ASEAN is trying to promote, they have a haze-free ASEAN vision to really have ASEAN someday that is haze-free.
There is also a danger that haze can pose to us in a COVID pandemic environment now. And that is, well, we know that haze affects especially those who have respiratory, pulmonary, heart diseases, and various other health situations. And so if we were to have a serious haze episode together with this ongoing pandemic, and we have new strains coming, right? So having both happening together would be an immense strain on our healthcare system that is already, you know, struggling and so fatigued after 2 years of battling. So working on haze really is something that must be prioritized, you know, for us. So it is unimaginable what the consequences would be if we were to have a bad haze season together with COVID-19.
The word that comes to mind is catastrophic, but yeah, okay. Just to conclude, guys, you know, if anybody would like to find out more, because there's a huge coalition of you guys involved, right? I mean, but what's the best place for them to hit to find out more and just to get involved as well?
We do have our Facebook page where you can check out. That's where we can most of our up-to-date information is. We will be launching our petition soon, and that should be up on the webpage as well very soon.
Okay, so this is the CERA Anti-Haze Action Facebook page?
Yes, correct.
Okay, all right. Okay, so I guess to find out more, as Helena said, just head to the CERA Anti-Haze Action Facebook group. You can find out all the information there. And as soon as the petition is up, do sign it. My thanks again to both of you. I've been speaking to Dr. Helena Vaki. She's the Vice President of CERA, Anti-Haze Action. She's also a Senior Lecturer at the Department of International and Strategic Studies at the University of Malaya. And also Kew Jiayao, who is the Co-Deputy Chair of the Bar Council Environment and Climate Change Committee. He's a Secretariat Member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group Malaysia on the SDGs, and also Secretary of CERA Anti-Haze Action. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.